This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we are joined by special guest, comedian John Francis. John, how's it going?
Good, thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. It's an honor to have you on today's show. Super excited to talk to you about, you know, all the things you have going on.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So, John, I guess, you know, my first question is like, what got you into comedy? What was kind of the catalyst that, you know, I guess got you initially interested in, you know, comedy and just pursuing, you know, actively pursuing being a comedian?
I think at some level it's always been there. I think as a, at some level it's a personality thing. It's, I've been making, you know, I remember anytime I felt tension as a child, making jokes to try to lighten the air. And, you know, a little bit of it's a process of default. I'm better at doing that than a lot of other things I've tried. And then around the time I got to college, I did a few stand-up open mics, and that went well. And, you know, I think I'm mostly driven by a love of writing, which is why I'm so active on Twitter and, you know, sending jokes out that way. You know, I'm very much in love with the process of writing jokes, putting material together, thinking about things. I enjoy the perspective that you get when you're trying to do comedy. And it, you know, it's very much a natural state. So, I mean, it's been gradual. You know, I keep doing, you know, I started doing open mics and started doing writing, and then that worked, and then I started trying to build an audience online, and that's continued to grow. And, you know, as long as it continues to grow, I'm really enjoying it and want to keep going in that direction.
Absolutely, absolutely. Where do you draw, I guess, your inspiration from? Because I know that a lot of, you know, comedians, you know, they say that, you know, hey, I just take life and, you know, the hardships and the ups and downs of life, and, you know, I'm able to kind of craft, you know, my persona, you know, around just everyday life. What would you say kind of, you know, inspires you or helps to, like, fuel your creativity?
That's a great question. I mean, I definitely, though, what you just said, I definitely relate to a lot. The, you know, the idea of taking life as it comes. And, I mean, you know, so many jokes I've told and material I've come up with a moment before I thought of it, which, you know, was a reaction to something that happened in my life. You know, I hadn't even been thinking about it. So a lot of it is from a reactionary place, and that's, again, where something like Twitter is so great, because then even a minute after that, you can be testing it in front of an audience and see how that works. I'd say the other, you know, I do, if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I do a lot of topical or, you know, this last year especially, political humor. And I think that comes from a place of, I've always been really interested in these political arguments that are happening and kind of simultaneously frustrated by, you know, it seems like there's arguments and a debate going on, but there's not necessarily like a neutral audience listening. So there's, you know, in my opinion, it's, you know, you've got several different groups that have several different opinions, and then it, since we're not really trying to change each other's minds, it does become a lot about an emotional appeal. And I think whenever you've got something, you know, as highly emotional as politics can get, the, you know, opportunity for humor and making light of it comes out. And I think just because I have such an interest and read about it and, you know, perpetually find myself somewhat frustrated by it, that sort of is maybe the fertile ground for, you know, trying to have a comedic perspective on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know in particular this election, you know, was one for the history books. I mean, I don't think anybody really saw what happened. You know, I don't think anybody saw, you know, this coming. It must have been, I mean, but your material, your source material on it was just amazing. It was, what was it like for you on a personal level, just, you know, following all this stuff and keeping abreast of what was, you know, unfolding?
I mean, I think it was probably similar to how a lot of people felt. You know, there's a certain, I mean, I'll say I remember I actually watched the speech where Donald Trump announced he was going to run for president. And I remember thinking then that, like, I, you know, did not think he was going to, you know, that the year was going to play out how it did, you know, ending with him winning. But I did see that there was, like, some type of appeal to him that was apparent from the beginning. I had actually read, I don't know what got me necessarily on this kick, but I had read a lot of books from, like, the post-World War II philosophers about, like, the rise of populism and authoritarianism, and, you know, and you could see, I didn't know that it was going to take the form of, like, Donald Trump's presidential campaign, and, you know, I think to some extent, you know, Bernie Sanders had a very populist movement as well, maybe from a slightly different angle. You know, so I had read a lot of books about, like, populism and the history of, you know, different populist movements in different countries. And, you know, I recognized early that that was, like, the appeal that certain candidates were going for. And you could sort of see, like, the country is really in a state of unease. So, you know, it started out kind of academic. I was like, oh, I had kind of read about this type of thing. And then, you know, I think by this point, it's we sort of, you know, watch, you know, you can sort of see how some of these mechanisms and appeal, you know, play out in our time. As far as, like, writing jokes on a daily basis, I was trying originally to write a screenplay about an election, and I picked the wrong election year to try to draw source material from, because in so many ways, this one is, you know, I've heard a number of people say that you can't satirize something like this because it's, you know, so many aspects of it are so unreal that, you know, a character like Donald Trump and some of the things that he winds up saying and some of the moments that we have, like, people would kind of reject it in fiction as just being sort of too out there. That's actually, I started, so I shifted from doing the screenplay to really focusing on trying to do more of, like, a late night style humor, which especially during the primaries is when I felt like I really learned the most maybe about the country, because that was, as someone who does jokes, the primary season was, and maybe not everybody feels this way, but for me, the primary season was the most fun because you could do a joke about anybody from either party and you could get, you know, some of the most gratifying things for me are when I see, you know, the people who like a joke are both, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters, Marco Rubio supporters, Donald Trump supporters, and Hillary supporters. You know, that to me means that, you know, even if they disagree with me, they still found it funny or they could still see the humor. And that you could see as the year went on, you know, by the time we got to the general election, you know, the laughter had become totally partisan. It was, you know, if the joke was good for Hillary people liked it. If the joke was, you know, you would face more backlash if you told a joke that people felt was unfair.
yep.
And we, you know, we're in January, February, and March, people were not quite as you know, as like Bernie started falling back behind, you started to see it a little bit. People would get touchy about that. I never tried to, you know, I don't view tweeting out a joke as being like a type of thing that, you know, especially I'm not, I don't have a platform big enough where a joke I do is going to change the polls. So I never felt too responsible for it. But you would hear, as the year went on, it seemed like it became a little less fun to be doing it, because as often as you would get a lot of people liking something, you would also get maybe more of a troll response too. Which actually, it became worrying as the year went on, because you really do, if you're putting yourself out there with an opinion, political humor is, you know, people will push back on you if they disagree with your opinion. Or my favorite, though, is a lot of times people will get mad at me and I feel like I agreed with their opinion. I just didn't know why they were mad. It was like they were just taking it more serious than me, because I made a joke. Especially, I remember specifically when there was a time period where I had decided in my head that Hillary had won the primary, but there were a lot of people who opposed her who did not feel that way. So if I made any type of joke or just, I wasn't trying to say I thought that was a great thing or anything other than I thought it was a fact that she was going to win. And I would get a lot of pushback from maybe, I don't know if there are people on the, to me they were, I don't want to say they were on the far left. I just don't think they had a sense of humor maybe that I had hoped. Because, you know, a lot of times people would say, how can you be cheerleading for that? And I would always say, I'm not trying to cheerlead for anyone. I actually, one of the things I enjoyed about this year is I didn't, at the beginning of the year, there wasn't anybody that I was, like, particularly in love with and particularly rooting for, which I felt, as somebody trying to do comedy about it, gave me a type of freedom, you know, where I didn't feel like I had, like, a home team bias or loyalty. So I always, people would accuse me, you know, and I know a lot of people feel this way. You know, people would, you know, accuse me of like taking a side on something that like wasn't funny. And, you know, that my intent pretty much all of the time was, you know, for it at least to be funny. And I never viewed it as the type of thing where, you know, I'm trying to, you know, push an agenda necessarily, but, you know, the closer you got to election day, that became sort of a trap, because, you know, every joke has a little bit of a perspective and a little bit of an attack in it, and by the end, I felt like that was all people were seeing, and I actually, towards the end, I started, the last couple weeks, I moved off of commenting specifically on, like, the politics of things, and you know, talking actually more about, like, my personal life, just to kind of clear the air a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the election in general, it was so polarizing, and, you know, the further, you know, we got into it, by the time we got to the primaries, it was almost like you could cut the, you know, the tension with a knife, you know what I mean? It was so thick, you know, people just, you know, were losing their minds. And so, you know, it's interesting to see how everything played out, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the next 4 years holds.
Yeah. I don't think anybody knows too well what to expect for that. I don't. After the election, I probably went about 2 weeks without heavy tweeting, just because I felt my perspective was so. I had always thought that there was a chance he would win, but I think, like a lot of people, the the poll numbers, and it came unexpected in the last couple of weeks. I had talked myself out of it because it seemed like, you know, and I've been listening to like old podcasts from October and November, and the subtext is clear. Everybody was like, well, Hillary's going to win, you know, but we got to take what happened with Trump seriously. And then, you know, it turns out, at least in a couple of states, the polls were off. I haven't seen, to me, this is uncharted territory at this point. I was listening to, it's not even just, you know, a lot of people are, focused on, you know, Hillary supporters are upset. But, I was home for Christmas and I put on AM Talk Radio, and it was a conservative radio show. And all of the callers on that program were upset about various things too. So I don't know how big the group of people that are like genuinely thrilled actually is. It seems like the main thing we disagree on is what we're upset about. This might have been, I don't know the conservative talk radio landscape well enough to know if I was listening to like an specifically anti-Trump show, but, you know, people felt betrayed about different cabinet picks he had made, and, you know, there's already people saying he's betrayed promises, and it's interesting because, you know, his campaign says that you can't take him literally. So,
yeah.
You know, they say you take him seriously but not literally, but, you know, this isn't the first time I've covered or I've like paid attention to a political. Like, normally taking a candidate like literally is sort of the same thing as taking them seriously.
Absolutely.
So I think, there's especially because he's such a marketer and such a, who am I protecting? I mean, he has a tendency to say things that aren't true and then change his mind and say something else, you know. So it's, you know, on the one hand, there's the possibility that he's going to govern the country totally different from what he campaigned on, which is sort of scary in its own way because that would mean the campaign, like, literally meant nothing, which I don't think is a good sign for, like, the democratic process. And then on the other side, if he is literal about everything he said, I think, you know, even a lot of his supporters say that, you know, they don't expect him to do literally some of the things. The truth will probably fall somewhere in the middle, but I don't, that's a little bit where I took to, I created a Rudolph the Reindeer Twitter account parodying. and part of that is just to suck the substance out of it, but still, you know, the one thing we do know is his tweeting style. That's real.
That is real.
So it's at Real Rudolph, RNRD, Red Nose Reindeer. And it's basically, I gave Rudolph the Red Nose Reindeer the same chip on his shoulder that Trump seems to have when he's tweeting, except, you know, Rudolph is taking out his, inferiority complex. And propensity to insult people on Santa and the other reindeer. And partly that's, you know, this transition period, it's this weird, it's almost like a purgatory state because we know he's going to be president, but, you know, there's not, whether you want to protest or applaud things, we're not in a position where he's actually doing things yet. So it's a great wait and see period, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wanted to kind of jump ahead and talk to you a little bit about some of your influences. Who are some comedians that you really look up to and that have kind of shaped and defined your style?
Who shaped and defined my style? I have watched, you know, comedy more than any other genre since I was a child. You know, really early, deep influences are like The Simpsons and Seinfeld. You know, I grew up watching hours of those. Also shows like I Love Lucy. I think, you know, this, I remember watching the old Nick at Night lineup, and you could watch an hour of that every night. That was, you know, that's a classic show. I got really into, in like high school and college, I was really a big Jon Stewart and George Carlin sort of at the same time. Lately, I revisited some George Carlin specials, and they didn't, you know, they didn't, because for a while I was like, this is the pinnacle of like what stand-up comedy can do. And, you know, it's that interesting thing about comedy. Now that we're 10 years away, you know, a lot of different aspects seem, I don't want to say dated, but if you were to perform the same material now, I don't know that it would hold up or go over as well, and it didn't necessarily hit me the same way. And I think part of that is a testament to the influence he had. It's a little bit like, you know, Seinfeld's observational humor. Once he did that, then, you know, that almost became what every comedian did.
Right.
And then if you go back to what he did, and then so then you go back to his original version, and it, you know, there's sort of an illusion there of like, well, that doesn't seem so special at this point. That's what everybody does.
Right.
But you got to, you know, it's hard to separate, you know, sort of that sensation with, well, originally he gave everybody the idea to go in this direction and kind of prove that it could work. Yeah, I also, you know, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and, you know, I don't watch as much of the late night humor now as I used to. And, you know, part of it's a result of doing my own. You know, I both don't, I check in on it to see what type of stuff they're doing, but I also don't want to be so influenced by it that, you know, my own material seems, you know, overly influenced by any of that. But, you know, I really would say that, like, the work The Daily Show did during the Bush administration, especially, I know that influenced a lot of people. And then, you know, no different there. I think, you know, Jon Stewart really opened up a world that now we take for granted that, you know, you could, you know, both be doing really, really funny comedy that's also, you know, has a point of view and has a perspective that, I mean, I think it's the pinnacle of their influence. You know, pieces they would do were just as influential as, you know, investigative journalism pieces.
Absolutely.
I've heard him in interviews say that, you know, he thinks that's too much influence, and I see that perspective as well. I don't think, you know, one thing I talked with a friend about, who also is a comedian, you know, no amount of satire is going to influence people to the degree that, like, if you have tangible video evidence of a crime being committed, for example, that's going to change a lot of people's minds way more than, you know, any type of well-crafted joke. And sometimes I do worry that culturally we get to a place where if we get the humor right, you know, we don't have to care about, you know, doing the maybe more boring investigative journalism that kind of can provide a backbone that we also need. Because I will say one of the things that I try to be influenced by is just straight nonfiction reporting. Now that I'm, you know, actively writing jokes on a daily basis and less influenced by comedians, and it's, you know, I'm trying to see, you know, and there's a lot of journalists that do a lot of good work, and I think the sad thing about it is, and it's sort of the nature of it, like really good long-form journalism just doesn't seem to go as viral, you know, unfortunately, as like a really good meme or a really good joke. you know, so if something strikes me in that way and I can, you know, write a joke that kind of captures a little bit of that perspective, I'm always happy when I do that because, you know, jokes sort of, you know, a little bit like social currency, you know, you can, you know, especially a tweet's 140 characters. If you can get an idea into two sentences and it's a really catchy idea that people want to share, you know, you can do some of the footwork maybe for an argument that people really should read a, like a longer piece about.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. Twitter is, I think is an amazing tool. I mean, as, you know, the president-elect has shown, you know, love him or hate him, you know, he is a master user at, you know, Twitter. He's figured out, you know, how to, you know, use it to express what he, you know, what he, who he is and what he stands for. And so, I think that, you know, you've got a really good grasp of Twitter as well. It's, and it's kind of one of those things where you either, you know, love Twitter or you hate it. You either get Twitter or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
But I think it's, Twitter is really indicative of the way our culture is moving. You know what I mean? You know, short, fast-paced, you know, to the point. And so it's interesting how it's evolved, you know, how Twitter has, you know, caused our culture to evolve, similar to the way that Facebook has. And, it, you know, so interesting to see, you know, where it will end up, you know, where it will take us, you know, as a people. So, yeah, all of it's just really, really interesting.
It is. It is. The, you know, this is about a year ago. I just crossed, I think, 31,000 followers on Twitter in the last couple of days. And about a year ago, I actually only had like 100 followers. And part of what got me into it was seeing this phenomenon of Trump on Twitter. And it did make me rethink, you know, at some level, he was running for president in his bathrobe with his cell phone tweeting from Trump Tower. And, you know, it did make me, it was like, well, there's no reason I can't have a comedic voice doing the same thing. If, you know, if it's working for the highest position of power in the land, if it's working for him, I think you're absolutely right about the short, fast pace. And I don't know that that's like a great thing as, you know, one of the things I'm hoping to do in the future is use it to share, you know, just use it to be sharing, you know, like something like this podcast. I actually really respect this podcast form, and you know, I've listened to, you know, a number of your earlier shows. And, you know, one of the things that's really nice about it is you can take the time to sort of unpack these ideas. Like, I know I've unpacked things talking to you so far that I, you know, outside of doing like a really obnoxious tweet storm, I don't think I could get these. And even then it's, you know, because each tweet sort of needs to seem like a little bit self-contained, where, you know, I wish I knew who to attribute this to, but I was, somebody was talking about, and some commenter on a television program was talking about, you know, we like to think that we're the most sophisticated and educated and, you know, with our virtue of, it is true that as soon as news breaks, especially with like Twitter, 2 minutes later, you know, millions of people are sharing it. That's true. Uh-huh. It's also true that you go back, you know, people would read the 30,000 word exchange between Lincoln and Douglas, you know, at the Lincoln-Douglas debate.
Right.
I don't, you know, is there anything that like a majority of Americans read that was 30,000 words this time around? not that word count is everything, but I do, there is something superficial about, and I would say with Trump's Twitter account, it's both, he's both a marketing genius for using it the way he does. But I think it's also fair to say that the account does not really convey much substantive depth. And I mean, to his, that didn't hurt him. And, that it's, he recognized that in this environment, you don't necessarily need that. In some ways, I view myself as like someone who loves the process, like the democratic process and the idea that the country deliberates for a year and thinks about which direction we want to head in. I do think one of the things that happened this year is I've had to question how real that is.
Yeah.
because I think like what I just said, and to be fair, I think the Democratic Party and Hillary put out more position papers and maybe had more of a substantive policy argument. But it's also true that that argument didn't necessarily make it to the general population. And there is something, I do feel like that in some ways is the great missed opportunity of 2016 is, I don't know that any type of consensus is formed around very much of anything.
True. Very true. Yeah. You're so right. Like when you said, you were speaking about, being able to get news in such a rapid pace. I mean, that's absolutely 100% correct. I mean, that's how I found out about Carrie Fisher's passing yesterday. It was on Twitter.
Yeah.
So,
sad.
Very sad, very sad. Like you were saying, it really is just, our information and how we consume it has really, really changed over the last, just 10 years. So it's mm-hmm. interesting to see where it will all be going,
Yeah, and I'm very interested in where it does go 10 years from now. I'm both optimistic and, the optimistic part of me would point to, I think, there is a lot of really good long-form journalism work, and there's a lot of really thoughtful work being done. And at the same time, there's also a lot of eyeballs being directed towards, stuff that doesn't quite have that same level of integrity. And, at some level, I like memes that are funny and the comedy memes, even memes I agree with, though, that are like more about conveying a message, it's not really full of humor. It's explaining why Paul Ryan is wrong or why Donald Trump is right. And at some level, the fact that we're looking at a picture with 12 words on it kind of makes me sad. That I understand. I mean, it's also the type of thing where that's where people's eyeballs are. So, that's part of why I'm on Twitter. Like at some level, I would love to, create very, very long, detailed and nuanced work, like something maybe more akin to a book. But for that to happen, it's like you do need, it's always been there to some degree with, billboards are kind of a early version of some of these memes and, certainly magazine advertising and, it's always existed to some degree, but sometimes it seems like if the meme is an advertisement for a bigger idea, sometimes it seems like we're stopping at the advertisement and not necessarily getting into the heart of what's going on. And especially with something like healthcare reform, there is no meme that's going to accurately explain, like, anything about that, because it's, you know, when you say healthcare reform, there's like 20 to 30 sub-issues, and probably a third to two-thirds of them aren't really divided on, like, a partisan line. It's, you know, most people, you know, there's so many different aspects of, like, the Affordable Care Act that when you ask specifically about pre-existing conditions or helping people pay for insurance that can't, you, like, 80, 90% of people support that. But then when you make a meme that says Obamacare on it, you know, then you get that 50-50 split.
Right, right.
And it's, as, you know, I had the health, I know the most about probably healthcare reform as opposed to other issues, so that one specifically always irks me. That even the people with the single payer, because if you, you know, if you study the Obama years and like the makeup of Congress, that was one of the reasons why I was a little lukewarm on Bernie Sanders at times, because the House of Representatives is controlled by Republicans and the Democrats are too much. Like, there is just no chance, even if he wins, that, like, a single-payer healthcare system
right.
is going to get through the Congress we have.
Uh-huh.
Which
essentially.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I understand the appeal of it, and, you know, it's appropriate. You know, certainly, you know, Trump made promises about things also, and, you know, all candidates do. I wish, you know, I tend to reward people in my own mind for being nuanced, and I don't, it seems like a lot of people go for, the good thing that memes can do and that Twitter can do is it can convey a powerful emotion. I think that's why it works so well for jokes. It can convey, like, a powerful emotion with a little bit of an idea, which is important. But then there's also that you want to have a lot of ideas that get aired out in public, too. At least I thought that was how it worked. Maybe, you know, it might be that that's just not that important.
John, tell me, where can our listeners find out more about you and keep abreast of what you're doing?
Okay, probably the best place would be my Twitter handle, at Real John Francis, JohnFrancis, Real, R-E-A-L, no spaces, Real John Francis. Pretty much anything I do gets retweeted or shared by that. I don't have a Facebook page. My Facebook page is private. Or just, you know, my private life. I would say the Twitter handle is the best place to go if you want to find out more about me. I'm putting together a, you know, website that'll have the archive of everything else I've done. You know, I also do at Real Rudolph, RNRD, the Red Nose Reindeer.
Yeah, that one's funny.
Thank you. That one, it was sort of, I didn't plan on doing that, but then I kept thinking of the jokes, and then that's been a lot of fun to do, and has given me a voice that's a little different from my own that's also fun to tweet. You know, there is that, when you get into that real narcissistic, that Twitter style of lashing out at people, there's something fun about that. I don't know that it's bringing out like an admirable side of me, but there's something definitely fun about it, and I think there is an appeal to it. I'm also on Medium. I think if you search for John Francis or Real John Francis, I think that's linked through Twitter somehow, because I just started that up, and it said I have like 2,000 followers, and I think they just merged that with Twitter somehow, because there's no way that would have happened. Because I'm going to be doing my goal for the new year is to do a couple longer, maybe you know, maybe your article length pieces a couple times a month, and at least a start that'll be on Medium. And then I'm actually, after the first of the year, launching my own podcast, which will be advertised off my Twitter account. That's the Twitter account. I have the most followers on that out of any other thing I do, so it's sort of by default become my home base for sharing things.
Yes, I understand. I can't believe it. Well, John, thank you so much. It's been great having you on today's show, and I'm just excited for you know, everything that you're working on going into the new year, and then also just it was really good to hear a little bit about, you know, what got you into comedy, you know, as well as kind of your take on, you know, the political climate that, you know, we're facing right now. So, man, thank you so much. It was great to have you on.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me on, and good luck with the podcast going forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John.
Yeah, no problem.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.